Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is going to bring back a College World Series title to Bob Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
In 2006 and 2007, Darren McFadden, while he was not awarded the Heisman Trophy, was awarded the Doak Walker Award, given to the best running back in college football. And once again, for another season, Rakeem Boyd has been added to the watch list. Now, will he become a semifinalist? Will he become a finalist? That remains to be seen. But what is not hard to figure out is the guy has talent. He's listed as a top 10 running back on 24/7 Sports, venturing to go to the NFL. There's a lot of people that have recognized him, including Phil Steele, who we'll have on at 8 o'clock this morning, as one of the best running backs in the Southeastern Conference. Both Phil and Athlon have given him second team All-SEC. So the question I want to start off with this morning, does he have any shot, any realm of possibility whatsoever to take home the Doak Walker Trophy, the Doak Walker Award? Any shot? Do you give him anything? That's what we'll start with this morning. All right, so July 16th, before the season, what percentage do you give Rakeem Boyd for actually capturing the Doak Walker Award?
It would be very small. A small percentage, and that's not necessarily a comment on Rakeem Boyd's talent as a running back. It's where the team's at and how many times do one of these national awards go to a team with a losing record? And it's so hard to project, A, what the season's going to look like, how many games you're going to play. I read an article or a tree topped a headline yesterday about changing the rules on the bowls yesterday. I mean, there's so many unknowns, but no one out there has a high level of belief this is going to be a team that has a winning record, number one, this year. Particularly if you go to conference games only, that's going to be very difficult for Arkansas. And particularly if you think about Arkansas being in a situation where the league says league games only and we're going to 9 or 10 games, that makes it even more difficult for Arkansas this year. So the odds of you being in a situation for your individual athletes to cash in on national awards become more difficult. So I think it just gets harder based on the current circumstances for someone like Rakeem Boyd's talents to stand out. You've got the challenge of, is the offensive line going to give him that opportunity? While this is an individual award, you've got to have a team that's prepared to give you that opportunity. So I'd say the odds of him being able to navigate through all of these circumstances in a landscape that's so uncertain is going to be tough.
The last time an SEC running back won this award was Derrick Henry back in 2015. Jonathan Taylor's won it the past two seasons, the former Wisconsin running back. And when you look at just the list, it seems like, and I'm just judging on based on what I know about the teams per year, the only team that might have a losing record was Boston College back when Andre Williams won it in 2013. But I'm going through this list, and most of the time, these teams, along with the player, had winning records, so it's going to be hard to justify based on what's happened in years past. If Rakeem was to even have a good season, if Arkansas wasn't to have a winning record, it's going to be hard to justify giving him that award, even though he could put out good stats this upcoming season in 2020.
And what's the kind of the phrase to describe what Kendall Briles wants to do with his offense? Veer and shoot, right? I mean, now they're able to accomplish that. We know there is a desire, at least, for downfield passing. We know that there are weapons at wide receiver they'd like to exploit. And, you know, the ball can really only go one place on most snaps. There's only really one opportunity for the ball to gain forward yards every time. So if veer and shoot is the way they're going with this offense long term, that doesn't probably add up to getting Rakeem Boyd, you know, 2,000 yards. And that's the kind of season he would probably have to have at Arkansas to get people's attention on a national level.
Because since 2013, every running back that's won the Doak Walker has had 2,000-plus yards. And the ones prior to that were pretty stinking close. So, and if you look at Kendall Briles' past, a lot of times he's employed a two running back system. Got a chance to speak with Lake Seastrung, who was a running back for the Baylor Bears in his time when Kendall Briles was there. Now, he wasn't the OC, but he was there, and he talked about that he likes a two running back system. Lake played alongside Shaq Linwood and Glasgow Martin, so you've heard good things about Traylon Smith, the former Arizona State running back, so you hope that Traylon Smith can give Rakeem Boyd breathers. And the other thing, if you point back to last year, there were times where Rakeem took himself out of the game. He would tap his helmet and come out in third down situations, so he's tired. So we'll see how his fitness is as far as this season is concerned. I know we've talked about how he needs to be a better pass blocker and pass catcher, but his fitness is something else that he'd probably want to improve on this upcoming season as well. But I expect, like you're talking about, I expect this offense to employ more of a two running back system. That doesn't mean you can't still give Rakeem adequate carries. I think at least 15 a game is worthy and fair, depending on how the offense is going that day. But I don't know, like you're saying, if he can reach into that upper echelon of 2,000-plus yards. Now, maybe it'll change. Maybe Kendall Briles will be like, man, we really just have a diamond here in Rakeem Boyd. We have to keep giving him the football. Yeah. And you can't expect Rakeem to keep up his 6.1-yard career average, which is third in the history of Razorback football running backs, to have it that high. If he's going to get more touches, his yards per carry are probably going to go down. That doesn't mean his production necessarily is going to go down, but he's probably going to have less yards per carry because they're going to be less breakaway run. So I think he's going to have a really good season. He might be a semifinalist. He might be a finalist if he really, really stretches it out. But I just have a hard time, even though I'd love to see him win it, I have a hard time seeing him win it based on the reasons we've given so far.
And you know, we talk about 2,000 yards. Oh, that's based on the idea you played 12 games. You know,
that's very true as well.
And that probably, I mean, what's least likely this year as far as season setup? As far as the just construction of your schedule, it seems right now 12 games as constructed seems very unlikely, at least sitting here on the 16th day of July. Don't you see a very narrow path to that at this point?
It seems to be getting slimmer and slimmer. Mm-hmm. And not college football necessarily, but the idea of playing 12 games, both eight conference games and four non-conference games.
Yeah, so, you know, playing it the way it's designed to be played this year, and that's what you need, because okay, if you played 10 games, there're probably going to be 10 Power 5 games at this point, or at least 9 of them would be. You know, you're still going to try to get the games that the TV networks need. You're still going to get the games. I mean, you're going to play maybe an extra conference game. That doesn't add up probably to more wins, and it probably doesn't add up to more yards for a premier back like that. So it's going to be more difficult this year maybe than ever before.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
The dialogue when it comes to discussing Felipe Franks is interesting. We've had people text in, he's the next Ryan Mallett. We've had people text in, he's going to be the next Nick Starkel. And I think this is definitely going to be more somewhere in between. Now, Nick Starkel played a little bit at Texas A&M. You were excited about his arm strength. He looked like he had the capability. Came here, wasn't the guy. You were excited about Ben Hicks coming in, knowing Chad Morris's offense for several years at SMU. Came in, wasn't the guy. Now, for a third consecutive year, you're hoping the quarterback situation can get back to like Austin Allen level-esque. Because if you look at the timeline between Ryan Mallett, Tyler Wilson, Brandon Allen, Austin Allen, it's literally, that's the ranking of where you would put those quarterbacks. And if Felipe can at least be Austin Allen level, which Austin was mid-tier to more upper-tier SEC quarterback at the time, you would be happy with that. Will that be enough to help you get to bowl eligibility? Probably not. But again, Tommy, like we were discussing the other day, you just want to be respectable at the quarterback position, and you haven't been the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it starts with that. It's hard in this league where you're not at least average at quarterback to be respectable as a team. So it starts with that. What is the hinge point on Arkansas's problems offensively the last 2 years? It's all been at quarterback and the lack of stability at quarterback. Arkansas needs to start and end the year, start camp and identify a quarterback quickly, finish up camp, go into a season, have what would be a normal cycle and a normal progression with a quarterback. That's been the problem, is a coaching staff that couldn't figure out who they wanted at quarterback very quickly. It seems like, at least, you know, with it from the outside world, it's a pretty obvious answer who your starting quarterback should be. You need some luck, keep this guy healthy, no issues. You know, the last thing he needs, like a some kind of freak injury with this guy, a non-contact, something, he goes down, you know, because they're not having any contact right now, something freak happen, and you lose this guy. So hopefully everything works out so where you can build some stability at the position, because that's what the problem has been with, what, eight different starting quarterbacks, I believe it's been, in two seasons. That's been the issue.
If you look at what happened last season when Florida played Kentucky and Felipe Franks dislocated his ankle, it was a gruesome injury. I would not advise watching it again, but you don't have as many concerns as I do. I still have concerns that he's not going to be the same mobile quarterback that we saw at Florida. Now, is he a Tim Tebow? No, but you still want him to be mobile considering the offensive line in front of him is still unknown, even with the addition of Sam Pittman, even with the addition of Brad Davis. They can't take the offensive line, which was one of the worst, if not the worst in the SEC, and all of a sudden vault them up to top five. That's just not going to happen, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Sam Pittman and I keep saying Sam Pittman first. Maybe Brad Davis, with the help and assistance of Sam Pittman, will get these guys to a top five offensive line. If that's, we can talk about the quarterback, we can talk about the defense, but if you get the offensive line to actually not just respectable, but a little feared when you go up against other SEC defense, that's going to bode extremely well for you. But I'm still just a little concerned, a little skeptical of, you mentioned just you can't have him go with gruesome or excruciating injury. I'm curious about how much the last one affects him, and if he has a little PTSD when concerns to that. Because regardless, if you get back on the field or whatever and you're playing again, that's still in the back of your mind. I don't care how solidly mental of an athlete you are. If you go through a devastating injury like Felipe Franks did in 2019, even if it's clouded way in the back of your head, it's still there a little bit. So even if he doesn't think about it a lot, just a little bit, it's still there. And I hope that doesn't affect him in this upcoming season, whether it's his mobility or the mental side of the game when they play quality SEC defenses that he'll see week in, week out.
Because I don't know how many people were watching that Florida-Kentucky game when he got hurt. He was running the football, and it just happened at the end of a play on a tackle, and it was a nasty break in his lower leg.
Got carted off the field, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was an ugly deal. I mean, it wasn't Theismann-esque, but it was, okay, whatever the two notches down from that is, it was not nice. It was ugly. And but it was a football play. And it
wasn't dirty or anything.
No, it wasn't dirty. It was just, I'm trying to remember, it wasn't really sliding in, but it was just kind of a hit at the end of a play that, it was kind of a routine play as best I remember. And it's one of those things that could happen kind of on any given play that your quarterback's running the football. So I understand your apprehension that, hey, is that in the back of your mind? And I've always kind of equated it like, if you have a knee injury or something, hey, have you ever had a car that dies on you? You know, when you go to put your foot on the gas and, you know, to turn left onto a busy five-lane road and you got to cross two lanes of traffic in the turn lane and you're worried about the car dying? You ever been in that situation? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So kind of an injury is like that. If you've had a car and it's died on you as you're trying to cross the road and you're not sure, and you've taken it to the mechanic, well, the next time you're turning left, until you've done it a few times, you're still nervous turning left across those busy lanes of traffic until, okay, I've done it two times, three times, four times, and eventually you don't worry about it anymore. But you're right, those first few times,
you're a little apprehensive at first.
There's some nerves there. You're thinking about it.
And, you know, you bring up that, especially if the SEC, which has not been announced yet, if they go to conference-only games, the first game that Arkansas and Felipe Franks would quarterback in is on the road in Starkville. Now, I can't tell you. I know that Saturday Down South ranked their D.C. as the worst in the conference, but that's still an intimidating place to play, even if their defense isn't that good. So I'm curious to see, as a guy that has played in this conference, that's played in the road on some tough venues. But you mentioned the Carr example. How does he react in his first game back in a new uniform with a new head coach, with a new offensive coordinator? Lots of emotions flooding through his head if that Mississippi State game is the first game. I expect that he doesn't have a great first game if it's Mississippi State. Maybe he has a better one against Nevada, but I don't expect... I mean, if you're coming off, again, a dislocated ankle injury in that first game, and your first game back is the following season with the examples I just mentioned, new head coach, new OC, new offensive line, new wide receivers, new running back, new team, and you expect this guy to just blow the doors off the first game... I don't see that happening. Will I think he get better from that experience? Yes. Well, I hope that he'll get through that game injury-free and say, okay, I did this before. I need to stop thinking about last year. And again, I don't know the dynamic with what he thinks about this injury. I can just tell you, as someone that's gone with a torn ACL, I think about it every time I play basketball. I've talked to several other athletes anytime they go through a really tough, devastating injury, that's something that they always harken back to. Again, it doesn't necessarily flood their emotions, flood their memories, but just the slightest bit can jinx you a little bit. It can mess you up a little bit. You know how important
confidence. Football is, confidence.
Football is a game of inches. Even like the slightest bit of non-confidence, or you don't have as much confidence as you would if you didn't have that injury, can mess things up. So I'm curious to see, especially if it's conference-only games, how Felipe fares in week one, if it's that way, on the road in Starkville.
Yeah, and you know, who knows where... wouldn't we like to know right now where the first game will be and who it will be against? You know, that's I guess, the million-dollar question also right now is what the schedule will even look like at this point. But... I think your concerns are valid. I think we don't give these guys enough credit for their mental strength, and that's why they are in the position they're in. It's understandable why we would be fragile, why we would have that being a little more on the front of our minds, and why it's buried deep in their recesses of their minds is because they're mentally stronger and tougher about those kind of things, and that's why they're high-level Division I athletes and we didn't get that opportunity, because that's part of the makeup of an athlete that reaches that point. I think we probably don't credit that enough because and been in that spot. And I think that's part of it, is you're not just physically gifted, you're mentally gifted as well. And I think that part goes into it. You're able to bury that away.
And another aspect that we haven't mentioned, we've talked about the unknown at the offensive line. New OC, new head coach for Felipe Franks. What about the unknown at the tight end position? Because last time I checked, you have Hudson Henry, the incoming freshman somewhere from Texas. Blake Toll's going to play Blake Toll. And there's not a lot of solid options at tight end. And typically, if you're a quarterback, that's the safety valve. That's the one you go to if you're in a third down situation. That's the guy you trust. Now, Brandon Allen had the luxury of Hunter Henry. I think Austin had him for 1 year. And then you think about DJ Williams being Tyler's luxury and Ryan's luxury back in the day. That's something that this unit that we know so far does not have. Hudson had the concussion this past season. I know he's got great family lineage with his dad Mark, his brother Hayden, and then his brother Hunter. But you're still curious to see if that tight end position is solidified. And I think in this offense, you're hoping that is the case, because they need to be able to dump down those safety valve. They need to be able to just find the open guy. Typically, a tight end is that guy that the quarterback is relying upon, and you really don't have a solid, at least at this point, at least from the outset before the season begins, at that position.
Here's my view on the tight end. It will be a good sign when you can actually use a tight end as a tight end. And here's what I mean. Arkansas has had to rely a tight end as an extra blocker, basically as another tackle, because you needed the help of the protection, because the offensive line was inept and unable to protect the quarterback with five. So it will be a good sign when you can actually use the tight end more as a tight end and as that safety valve, as that receiver out there. So it's a good point. I'll be interested to see how much you're using the tight end as another protector, as another blocker, particularly when you're going up against better defensive ends around this league, when you're lining up against an All-American on the other side. How much are you going to actually release them from the line of scrimmage, and how much are you going to use them to double team on a great defensive end?
And that once again comes back to how solidified is the offensive line early on. As Tommy mentioned, you want the tight end to be an option, not just a pass blocker, but an option in the passing game, which Arkansas has not. You've had those guys in C.J. Gray, Jeremy Patton, stuff that you thought would be good. I know this stuff with C.J., off-the-field issues and stuff, but there's no running his talent, but because of the blocking inadequacies that Tommy referred to, you weren't really able to take advantage of that position, even though you had some mismatches in certain situations.
The only problem with your tight ends really trying to help out with, you know, better defensive ends and being an extra blocker is they're 30 or 40 pounds lighter than your linemen are going to be. So that doesn't always add up to being a great option, but that's really what Arkansas's been forced to do the last few years.
And I wouldn't say Hudson is frail, but he does not have the same frame as his brother at this point yet. So it's going to be
6'5", 250 or so is what Clay had him listed in his preview magazine.
And I don't, maybe that is Hunter. He just comes across as like not as thick and big as Hunter eventually became. And maybe I'm,
he's not as old as Hunter either.
Yeah, maybe I'm miscalculating that. I've seen Hudson in person. I've seen Hunter in person. Hunter's definitely the more intimidating when it comes to just looking at him straight up. But hopefully Hudson can, at least from a physical standpoint, get to that. So
yeah, I agree. So that, it'll be interesting, just to see how this offense utilizes and keeps the, how it involves the tight end. Yeah, because it's something we don't even really know yet. So, hey, even in these challenging times, Academy Mortgage is open and ready to serve you and can do it kind of contactless. That's a new word, contactless customer service. They've got it with Matt Fowler. They're committed to meeting your financing and refinancing needs at Academy Mortgage with the highest level of service. Here's how they can do it with no contact. They got the new app that can take care of everything with quick pre-approval. You can fill out the application, all the disclosures, upload the documents, and stay in tune and up to date throughout the entire process. And with these low interest rates right now, the dream of home ownership or a lower interest rate can be yours with Academy Mortgage. The virtual financing options are easy for home buyers to refinance or get that home loan right now with Academy Mortgage. Call Matt Fowler, 870-580-5210, and find out about the easy app to use with Academy Mortgage, your first choice home loan lender. You can go to academymortgage.com. They're in Harrison, Mountain Home, and in Clinton. That's Academy Mortgage, your first choice home loan lender.
First call of the morning. Let's go to Rod on I-40, who wants to talk quarterbacks. Rod, you're on the Morning Rush.
Yeah. Good morning, guys. I thought Chad Morris was this great genius recruiter, and we had a couple of decent classes, and either they forgot how to play football on the way up here, or we had some coaching malpractice, because the backup was always better than the starter. And I just want to see Felipe be a genuinely solid quarterback. He doesn't have to be flashy. I don't expect, Heisman Trophy-type numbers from him. But we've had this problem. I believe we had some coaching malpractice over the last two or three years. One of them just didn't want coaching, and I think the others didn't really know how. But I just couldn't understand how these guys were recruited so good and couldn't do a thing on the field. Either he was a bad recruiter or a bad coach. One of the two, don't you think?
Yeah, Rod, appreciate the call this morning. I want to address something first. First off, I don't know why people keep saying that Morris had a couple good classes. He had one good class, the second one. The first class wasn't good. It was outside the top 40, top 50. That's not a good class. So I just want to set the record straight on that as first off. And yes, his second class was really good, top 25-ish, depending on what recruiting service you look at. But it also takes time for those freshmen to develop, so you shouldn't have expected that much out of this past season. You should have expected better than 2-10 or 2-8 before he got fired?
Yeah.
The last two games. So you should have expected better than that, but not that much. And on the note of Bielema not wanting to coach, yeah, it looked like he gave up towards the end of his tenure. With Chad Morris, some guys are just better as coordinators. You brought up Brent Venables before. We've talked about Bud Foster over there at Virginia Tech, longtime Virginia Tech DC. I think he retired.
He retired.
Yeah, but these are guys that have made their heyday, made a ton of money being defensive coordinators. There's other offensive coordinators that are the same way. Some guys just aren't meant to be head coach, much less Power 5, much less SEC West head coaches. And we saw this past season, Chad Morris isn't adequate enough to be a head coach. Now, he might have great success at Auburn as the OC. I'm still out. The jury's still out on that. I think he can have success there if Gus actually lets him run the offense, but we're both under the impression that's not going to happen. So it's just curious to see what's going to happen with this class. You actually got in a top 30 class this year from Sam Pittman and company after being outside the top 100. But now, unlike with Chad Morris and his group and his unit and his coaches, that actually has to translate on the field to wins. And you mentioned Felipe Franks. I don't think anyone... And anyone with just a realistic fandom is expecting Felipe to put up Heisman caliber numbers. As I mentioned, you're just wanting to inch back into Austin Allen type numbers. And that's not like, that's not way out of the ballpark. Austin was a little slightly above average SEC quarterback. Pretty good. If he had more offensive line help, I think he was sacked like 34 times in 2016, if I remember that correctly. Maybe he would have been better. So maybe Felipe can be better or around Austin if he just gets some protection from his offensive line and those young, talented playmakers, whether it's Boyd, not really Boyd, but Knox, Burks, Woods, and others, they can give him some help as well this upcoming season.
You know, one of the things you brought up yesterday in the show is that Franks was signed by the Boston Red Sox, right? It's a very late pick, kind of a flyer pick.
947th overall.
But what does that tell you? The fact that a major league franchise would take him?
There's potential.
But that he's an athlete, right? I mean, that to me is that's what I take away from that is dude's an athlete. He's got some skills because that's what you also want to see is, you know, guy's got great athletic skills. In general, your quarterbacks possess that, but I don't remember a lot of talk about, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but, you know, Peyton Manning, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, probably wasn't highly sought after by Major League Baseball franchises. You know, a lot of times you're better, more athletic quarterbacks. Wasn't Mahomes pretty highly sought after? Seems like some of these quarterbacks, Murray, some of these other guys.
Oakland A's.
Yeah, I mean, they all seem to.
Russell Wilson, I think the mayor.
You know, all these guys seem to have multiple sports offers is what I'm saying. Now, his draft options was like 950th or whatever, 947.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not like this is a first-round offer like some of these other guys. But my point is, it just goes to check off the box of high-level athletic skill, great hand-eye coordination generally goes along with that. What you're looking for is the complete toolbox of athletic ability. And that's what I'm talking about is you're able to be versatile with your skill sets. And that's just another indicator of, yeah, it's there. Because the Boston Red Sox ain't coming with even a minimal offer if you don't have the tools.
Bart Simmons of 24/7 Sports had to say this. He's either the National Director of Recruiting or the National Director of Scouting. I always mix his title up. But he says, I'm curious when Ben Hicks or Nick Starkel could have taken Florida. Because at this point, I'm still very much undecided on what Felipe Franks even is and would help me figure out. And I think you're just wondering, as I mentioned yesterday, there's the sequence when Florida played Miami and Franks just throws this brilliant ball and touchdown. Florida scores and they go up on the Hurricanes and you hear Felipe talking to the television camera on the sidelines a little bit. The following possession, the following sequence when the game is in Florida's hands, all they got to do is get a couple first downs, the game's over, he throws a pick, an inexplicable pick. The talent is there, but the inconsistency is there as well. Tommy mentioned his athletic ability. Drafted by the Boston Red Sox, 947th overall. I think they just brought him in for a workout. They saw him throw a little bit, can throw 90-something. They're like, all right, we'll sign you. Well, that shows you that, as he mentioned, Boston took a chance on this kid because they're curious and excited about the potential. Will he play baseball at the next level? It looks like he's leaning more towards football, similar to what Kyler Murray is doing in the NFL right now. It looks like that is first love. There's a racial incident that happened in high school that has a lot to do with that, and he just feels more in tune with football and stuff. But I just think that like he has the ability to at least wow you as an Arkansas fan, to get you excited. Now it's a matter of, hey, can you not be Nick Starkel? Can you be the guy that actually finishes and produces on the field? Not just wows you with videos, not just wows you with an arm strength or a cool highlight, but actually gives you consistency on the football field, whether on the road or at home.
Yeah, and, you know, what can become, what is his potential? What is his ceiling? And really, how hard does he want to go for it this year? You know, what can become the most of him this year at Arkansas? I don't think any of us had any confidence that this previous coaching staff and Joe Craddock as the tutor of quarterbacks were going to wring the most out of a guy like Franks if they were still in charge. I don't think Felipe Franks is here if Joe Craddock is still coaching quarterbacks. I think we're all confident in that statement. What can Kendall Briles do with this quarterback to make him the most? Because now you're in a setup and you got the coaches that can actually take a guy like Franks and mold him into something greater than he is now. That wasn't happening before. And I think that's what excites me a little bit, is I think you've got some coaching that can take a talent that's not completely raw, that's got some skills, and what can you do to elevate it? Because that hasn't happened a lot. Who's the last quarterback coach that really kind of elevated somebody? Dan Enos?
Dan Enos with Brandon. Yeah. And I think you saw some success from Austin. But, yeah, that's been a while.
I think if Barry Lunny had been coaching quarterbacks, maybe you'd have seen that a little bit more, if he'd have been the one charged with quarterbacks.
Why isn't he Ventura? And he's the OC now at
UTSA. He is
UTSA.
Now, but when he was here, he was stuck with tight ends.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, Joe Craddock was the OC, so I mean.
But even prior to that, he was Bielema's tight end coach. He was brought in, right?
Yeah.
Is there a reason that they didn't try and bring him as the quarterback coach? I guess the OC is typically the quarterback's coach as well, so that makes sense. But
he'd done it when he was with his dad at Bentonville High, and he played the position, obviously, at Arkansas, mm-hmm. but I think he'd have been a tremendous quarterback coach.
So, well, I guess we'll find out, see what UTSA's quarterback does this year. They were set to play someone big, and I'm forgetting who it was, but obviously that's been changed, I think, because of the non-conference to conference only. This is what Tom Fornelli of CBS Sports had to say about Franks. He doesn't think they can take Arkansas very far because he thinks there's a lot of work to be done at Arkansas, and he doesn't see Felipe Franks as the guy that can step in and take Arkansas to the next level. So there's some people discounting Felipe Franks, and there's people excited about Felipe Franks. It's only a couple weeks, a couple months, till we see what actually happens with Franks in this quarterback.
As long as it's just the non-conference games, I'm okay, because the magazine is based on conference records. So all my predictions for the conferences, when you see the teams stacked in order, that's how I think they're going to finish in the conference race. It has nothing to do with the non-conference. The only two pages that might get affected a little bit are the top 50 page, where it is the non-conference is factored into that. But for the most part, for the magazine, if they're playing conference football this year, Matt, I'm happy. And I'd like to see some teams play a full slate. This is Phil Steele, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
All right, let's welcome in the guru of college football, Phil Steele of Phil Steele's College Football Preview. Phil, appreciate you making some time for us on The Morning Rush, man.
Hey, real pleasure being on with you guys.
So, a lot of people were really excited to see you come out with your all-SEC list. You had six Razorbacks on it. I know really the headline of that list was Rakeem Boyd on second-team all-SEC, and he's been second-team in a lot of different places, Phil. Do you see a scenario by season end under Kendall Briles' high-flying offense where he could be named first-team all-SEC?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you go back to last year. Last year, Rakeem rushed for 6.2 yards per carry. And this year, they're probably going to emphasize the run a little bit more. They're big up front on the offensive line, and they got some guy as a head coach. Sam Pittman knows a thing or two about offensive lines. At Georgia, I'm on the Joe Moore Award Committee. We have great respect for what Pittman did with the offensive lines at Georgia, even at Arkansas before that. So I think Boyd running behind that will be in good shape. And you take a look at a player like Kylan Hill for Mississippi State. He's going to be in the Mike Leach offense now. So how many rushing yards is he going to get, or is he going to be more of a receiving run? You know, there are great running backs in the SEC. Najee Harris, Zamir White, both what I rated number one coming out. But, yeah, Boyd can definitely step in there and grab that one spot.
Phil, you bring up Sam Pittman. It seems like when he was initially hired, people were a little skeptical. Offensive line coach moving to the head coach in the toughest division in college football. But I think he's picked up a little bit in terms of college football analysts. In the last couple months, what he's done in recruiting, who he's hired in Barry Odom and Kendall Briles, have you bought in a little more to Sam Pittman and what he can do at Arkansas?
Well, you know, I think the one situation which is tough is this year, because as a first-year head coach, no spring practices, didn't get a chance to learn the players probably as much as he would have liked to. I think it's tough for any first-year head coach this year. But overall, like I said, being on the Joe Moore Award Committee, we've got great respect for Sam Pittman, produced great offensive lines each and every year at Georgia, and I do like what he's been doing recruiting. I do like what he's been doing with the team. So I think he'll get the job done at Arkansas. It's tough going from Bielema's big offensive line to a more mobile offensive line, no, going back to a big offensive line, three head coaches in 4 years. It is a tough situation this year. So I will say to Arkansas fans, cut the guy a little slack this year if it's not a seven-win season, because it is a very tough situation to step into, but I think he'll get the job done.
Phil, let's talk about the personnel that Sam does have coming back on his offensive line. You got some juniors and seniors in four spots at tackles and at the guard, and then it's at center with Ty Clary, Myron Cunningham, and Dalton Wagner at the tackle spot, Shane Clinton, a redshirt junior, at left guard. What do you see as the potential with some of those guys in the junior and senior classes on that offensive line to be potential starters?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you look at the veteran offensive line they have coming back, that's a good thing. And the one thing Sam Pittman wanted to do, he wanted to add size back on that O-line. As you know, the previous staff wanted more mobile, smaller offensive linemen, but they were able to add some weight. And Coach Pittman was glad about the weight that they were able to put on. So it's tough switching up schemes like they have over 3 years, but I think he's going to mold a pretty good offensive line, as he's done everywhere he's been. You touched on Ty Clary at the center spot. He's a guy that's got this basically his fourth year as a starter. He started those last four games in 17. He started the last 2 years at center. I think he's going to be one of the better centers in the country. The tackles are in good position. You got a couple of big boys out there. On the outside, Dalton Wagner is coming in, and he's a 6'9", 311-pound guy. Myron Cunningham, 6'7", 319. So I like the size on the offensive line, and with Pittman being the head coach, you know he'll mold a good group. I would have liked to have had him get an entire spring with this unit.
Let's talk about Felipe Franks in the quarterback spot. Obviously coming from Florida, graduate transfer. How well does he fit in with the system Kendall Briles is bringing to Arkansas?
I think he'll fit in just well. You know, very, very good. Briles, I think, is a type of offensive coordinator that builds his offense around the quarterback's strengths. So he'll take Felipe Franks' strengths and use those. Franks, much maligned at Florida at times, but the guy's got a very strong arm. He can make all the throws. He's got great size. He was a team leader at Florida. He was always in the weight room, and you know, his problem probably was recognizing coverage a little bit there. But Kendall Briles is a really good offensive coordinator, and I think he'll be able to work with him on that.
We're speaking with Phil Steele of Phil Steele's College Football Preview here on the Morning Rush. Phil, I heard you talking to Matt Moscona earlier this week or last week or so, and you guys were talking about the prospect and the idea of just having conference games or non-conference games and kind of how your rankings are affected on that. Which way are you leaning, particularly in the SEC, on how many games they're going to play this upcoming football season?
You know, if everybody plays a conference schedule, I'm fine with it. We would love to see teams like the SEC play 12 games. And, you know, you have a team like Notre Dame out there that is on Arkansas' schedule. And Notre Dame's willing to play that game. Arkansas's willing to play that game. Let's play it. I love these non-conference games. I think we will miss some of the great non-conference matchups that were scheduled. Washington was hosting Michigan. Oregon was hosting Ohio State. USC was playing Alabama. USC was playing Notre Dame. We're going to miss out on some big-time matchups like that. But, guys, as long as we got conference football, I am thrilled with it this year. And, you know, I hope the SEC plays all 12.
And, Phil, when you were talking about some of the teams within this conference, you mentioned Bama, you mentioned Georgia, but one of the teams that you're high on this year is Texas A&M. I remember Kellen Mond at SEC Media Days this past season told us he thought he was the best quarterback in the SEC. Well, Joe Burrow was this past season. Do you think Kellen Mond, Jimbo Fisher, and Texas A&M can finally take that next step to make Jimbo actually worthy of his contract this year?
Yeah, and I'll go back to last year's conversation I had with Coach Fisher and going over the team with him. And I had looked at the schedule prior, and I was like, wow, that is a brutal schedule. And as it was, you guys know Texas A&M played three number one ranked teams last year. Mm-hmm. Clemson was number one when they played them, Alabama number one when they played them, LSU number one when they played them. They also took on number four Georgia, number eight Auburn. That's a brutal schedule. And when I was going over the team last year with Coach Fisher, I was amazed at the lack of seniors. I mean, it was almost like, wow, this entire team's going to be back next year, Coach. I said, I'm going to put you on the cover of my magazine, my national magazine, next year. And, well, it's next year, and Texas A&M's schedule got lighter. I rate it the number 66 schedule this year. That's 52 spots lower than last year. I don't know if they're – last year they played those five top 10 teams. I don't know if they're going to play more than one top 10 team this year. Then you look at the experience chart. They jump all the way up to number 10 on my experience chart. 17 returning starters, practically the entire team is back. And the thing I love about Kellen Mond, if you're going to play quarterback for Jimbo Fisher, you got to be able to take coaching. That means the coach is going to say some things that might not make you happy, but if you can take that coaching, you'll be a better quarterback. Kellen Mond's that guy. So I think he will be one of the better quarterbacks of the SEC this year. The offensive line, I rate number 13 in the country. The defensive line, number 12. And I made Texas A&M my number one surprise team this year. And a surprise team is a non-top 10 team that I think can make the playoff. 2 years ago, it was Notre Dame. Notre Dame wasn't in the top 10, made the playoff. A couple years back, Washington did that. Last year, I had Utah. They almost did it last year. They won that doggone Pac-12 title game. They would have been there. But A&M's my number one surprise team this year. Watch out for the Aggies.
Phil, what were the biggest challenges you had this year with coronavirus and all the uncertainty in the world? What were the biggest challenges you had in putting together your preview magazine this year?
I would say it came back in March and April, and that's when the governor of Ohio shut down all the offices. So my entire staff went on unemployment, and I'm in an empty office for 7 weeks, I believe it was, just toiling away at the magazine by myself. And I said, you know, we normally send that last page to the press at the end of May. And in March, I'm like, it's impossible. I don't even have my staff here. I can't put this thing out at the end of May. And I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to talk to the head coaches. And then as things got better and the office opened back up, the coaches were very receptive. I talked to over 110 of the coaches this year, spending about an hour per team with each one, going over every player on the team with them. And then it started to really ramp up for the season. Got excited again. And we sent the magazine to the press July 8th, which is much later than any other year. But we already got the magazines back from the press. We're sending them out on the trucks already. We've never had a turnaround time that quick. And it's because we printed less magazines. We went from printing 200,000 magazines to just 50,000 this year. And we only have one national cover as opposed to printing the nine different covers. But probably the biggest thing was the shutdown for 7-8 weeks in March and April.
Any difference in the level of information coaches were able to give you just based on the fact that spring practices didn't happen? You got schools like Arkansas, Ole Miss, Missouri, Mississippi State, where coaches, you know, didn't know their teams as well, being new coaches and haven't been on the field with their team. What challenges did that present in you being able to get the in-depth information you normally get?
Yeah, and it didn't affect me with any experienced coach, because most experienced coaches are like, you know what, Phil, we had our off-season winter conditioning. I know the player shape they were coming in. Yeah, we missed out on 11 practices, but no big deal. You know, put the ball in the field, we'll be ready to play. But with the new head coaches, there was some of that. You go back to Michigan State, for example. Their head coach not only came in, he came in after the recruiting class was signed. With Mark D'Antonio signed the class, then stepped out of Michigan State. So Mel Tucker only has 10 returning starters on that Michigan State team. Didn't have the benefit of a spring practice. And at least first-year head coaches got to go out and recruit their players, and they know the freshmen. He doesn't even really know the freshmen as well as he would like. So I think he's in a tough situation. Coach Pippen's not in a great situation not having spring. But for the most part, the majority of the coaches, I got the same amount of information level that I would had they even had spring practice.
Talking with Phil still here on the Morning Rush. Phil, one of the more interesting storylines that came out this week is USC transfer JT Daniels, who was given immediate eligibility by the NCAA at Georgia. I was kind of surprised to see this. Him, Jamie Newman going at it. You got Brock Vandergriff down there as well. What do you make of him getting immediate eligibility, and how do you see the quarterback situation shaking down there in Athens?
You know, I've watched both Jamie Newman and JT Daniels, and I, you know, coming in, JT Daniels was the higher-rated quarterback, but Jamie Newman is a guy that really impressed me last year at Wake Forest. I mean, when he had his receivers healthy, that would be the first eight games of the year, Jamie Newman was dynamic, and he's a big guy. He's 6'4", he's 230. You might watch him play, you might compare him a little bit to Cam Newton with the size he's got, the arm strength he has. He's mobile. And like I said, he was a very accomplished passer for Wake Forest. Then he lost his top two receivers. Numbers went down sort of a little bit at the end of the year, but he had two quality guys there. So I think Jamie Newman, with the fact he's been there longer, would still be my favorite to win the job over JT Daniels. But whichever way you look at it, I don't think they're in too bad a shape. Losing a longtime starter like Jake Fromm, but replacing him with Newman and Daniels, that's pretty good. And I actually rate Georgia's defense number one in the country. They have my number five rated defensive line, number one set of linebackers, number four DBs. So when I look at Georgia, I think that they're a top-notch team this year, provided the biggest question mark is the offensive line. They not only lose four starters, they lose Sam Pittman.
Phil, when you think about quarterbacks, which is what we're talking about, there's going to be the Heisman contenders, the big dogs you're thinking, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, but more of the dark horse side of things, whether it's Kyle Trask, whether it's Miles Brennan and others, who are some of your dark horse quarterbacks that you think have a chance to win the Heisman Trophy in 2020?
Well, you know, I'm going to throw one guy that is probably not very much on the radar, Derek King of Miami.
Okay.
I watched this kid play at Houston. He's dynamic. I mean, he can hurt you running, he can hurt you passing, and he's stepping into a pretty good situation because Miami got poor quarterback play the last couple years. He greatly upgrades that. They've got talent surrounding him, and Miami's my number one most improved team in the country. So I think you're going to see their record go from 6-7 last year up to double-digit wins, provided they play 12 games, or let's say the losses cut down to just one or two this year. And that makes Derek King one of those players that could be a dark horse Heisman Trophy candidate. Other quarterbacks to look at, you know, you would take a look at maybe an Alan Bowman of Texas Tech. If this guy can stay healthy, he'll put up some big-time stats. And I think he would have a chance of working into the mix at that point.
Phil, the likelihood is the crowd sizes are going to be a fraction of what they normally are in games. Your book measures everything and takes into account home field advantages. What's the venue this year that's going to take the biggest hit as far as advantage by not having the home field crowd? You look at it all. Who's going to lose the most edge this year by not having the home crowd?
I'm going to go out of the box on this one a little bit, and I'm going to pick two teams, and they're from a place where you don't anticipate crowds. You don't really think, but Oregon and Washington, because those are two stadiums that aren't, you know, 100,000, but they're big enough, and those crowds are loud. Washington and Oregon, you go into Autzen Stadium, it's one of the loudest stadiums out there. Washington, same thing. And I think those two stadiums losing their fan base, they've had both have great home records. You look at the Ducks, they've only lost two home games in the last 3 years. Washington's a team that's only lost 13 home games the last 9 years. I think those two will be affected, and then naturally, you know, SEC, you're talking about some of the best fan bases in college football. So going into Jordan-Hare and playing Auburn or LSU in Death Valley, if there's no fans or there's a handful of fans, naturally you have to take that 5 or 6 point home field edge and lessen it.
Phil, let me top off the interview with this. I'll let you give your spiel for a sec. Why buy your magazine over Athlon, over Lindy's, and other college football magazines out there?
Well, pure information. And it costs more than every other magazine out there. I'll go out and say that. But, I mean, it's like getting 130 different media guides rolled into one. And the beautiful thing about it is if you had 130 media guides on your desk, it would take you forever to find the information you want. But I've got all 130 paid teams laid out in the same format. And we give you the same amount of coverage on Arkansas State that you do on Alabama. Two full pages. You want to know who the starting left tackle is for any team, you can close your eyes, point to the part of the page where the left tackle is, and you'll know where to find him. We want to know a record for a team from 5 years ago, once again, you know exactly where to look. You want to know a score from a game 3 years ago? You know exactly where to look. A stat from last year? You know exactly where to look. It's all in the same spot, every page. And I talked to 110 of the 130 coaches out there. They're in the best shape. And we don't give you just a starting lineup or a two deep. We give you a three or four deep on each team. And not just the player's height and weight, but a little background on each one. So it really has about four times the amount of information. It's quick, easy reference. It's even quicker and easy reference than the internet. Like, if I asked you 10 questions, who's the starting left tackle at Ole Miss? You know, what was Mississippi State's record 3 years ago? What was the score in this game? You could find it in the magazine in about a minute, minute and a half. Meanwhile, if you went to the team's websites, you're probably 10, 15 clicks away from actually finding the information you want because they're all set up differently.
Phil Steele at philsteele.com. You can find his college football preview at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million this year. Phil, appreciate you making some time for us, man, on the Morning Rush.
Hey, a lot of fun talking football with you guys this morning. Always enjoy it.
The toughest questions.
What is going on?
The easiest answers.
Trivia!
Pick your category.
Light on medical knowledge, heavy on Broadway trivia.
Ty or Tommy.
Fight!
It's time for Trivia Thursday.
So you were asking me about my list earlier, Tommy, the best restaurants that I put out as far as Mexican food in the state, and you hadn't been to some of them, so today...
I didn't even know some of them existed.
Today is going to be the best lake songs he listened to out there on the lake,
wow.
So that's something...
I told you earlier this week, because you asked me, which is never a good question to ask me, hey, anything you want me to do, anything I can do to help you?
That's not... I'm never going to ask
that
again.
And I said, hey, when you get time... You might add a few summer sounding lake going songs to our rotation, and you've done a good one. You've done a fabulous job of adding some stuff that would be on the lake list for me.
That's a great one
to the Morning Rush. So yeah, I mean, you've nailed that. So I trust you'll do well there.
I hope I do. So that's
you're putting too much into him.
So we'll see what happens today.
I thought that was a pretty fun assignment, actually.
Absolutely, you know, it was.
So I think I've done a good job. We'll continue on that. And before we get into Trivia Thursday, I want to tell you about our friends at Kevin Hickey.
Yeah, they're bringing you Trivia Thursday today. If you're going through a divorce or a child custody issue, DHS, or a criminal matter, those can hit you hard. You need an aggressive, experienced attorney. That's Kevin Hickey with a location in Fort Smith, also in Bentonville, to take care of you. Kevin can fight for you from your corner. 479-434-2414 in the River Valley. 479-802-6560 in Northwest Arkansas. Now, you're probably driving right now, didn't get those numbers. We get it. They're online, kevinhickeylaw.com. You can read more about Kevin, his experience, his team. Also, he's got a great blog there and some case studies, some examples. Might be one that fits the exact situation you're going through. Some great reads there as well. kevinhickeylaw.com. Again, those phone numbers for Fort Smith and Bentonville are on there as well. That's kevinhickeylaw.com.
The floor is yours, Mr. Jenkins.
One thing that I'll mention before this, college football ESPN Facebook page just put this out. The NCAA has eased rules for bowl eligibility this season. So, Tommy, there is a chance that the Razorbacks can win two games and make a bowl game this season.
So what are the rules now? I saw this came out yesterday.
It's, let's see here. Allows all FBS teams to count two games against FCS opponents that average at least 80% of the maximum amount of football scholarships during a two-year period. Previous bowl eligibility rules allowed FBS teams to count one FCS opponent.
Okay.
So I think it's basically
right
just
now,
trying
Arkansas
to...
Arkansas has just got one FCS opponent right on the schedule. It's Charlotte. So if that game even holds.
Right. So I guess they're just counting more... They're giving more weight to an FCS
right so
game.
The... My guess is these rules will have to adjust more moving forward.
Yeah.
And who knows how many bowl games will actually even be played, guys.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, seriously, I mean, you're going to have to wait to see actually how many games are in a season before you can even determine what bowl rules are and then how many bowl games there are. So, I mean, to me, it's moot at this point.
Hey, Ty, what's the score right now? Are you still
down
losing?
6-3.
You're still, okay. I was just wanting to make sure Tommy was still... kicking your butt. All right, Razorback basketball trivia. Which Razorback holds the school record for scoring the most points in a single game?
Rodney Clark.
That is correct. Do you know who it was against?
Alcorn State.
That is correct.
31 points?
Nope.
No,
51.
51 points. Yep,
51,
very good.
31 wouldn't be right.
The other three, Martin Terry went for 47 against SMU. Todd Day scored 43 against LSU. And Mason Jones had 41 against Tulsa this past season.
And 40 against Auburn.
I remember watching it. Yeah, I mean, I think I was at that game, in fact.
Which Razorback has the most career points?
Todd Day.
Todd Day is correct.
He scored. I mean, he was like a 20-point machine. I remember as a kid, I mean, he was like my hero. I mean, because that guy, his career average may be over 20. Because, I mean, he just was unstoppable.
I often wonder in 1990 if that Final Four isn't played in Denver, how does that Arkansas team win it? Because, I mean, you think about the altitude difference and what they do. If that game isn't played in Denver, Colorado, in that altitude, does Arkansas stand a better chance against Duke? Or do they beat the Blue Devils, for that matter? So, something I've always thought about.
Think they gave Duke an edge?
Arkansas style contends on having the fitness and stuff, but, I mean, the air up there. I mean, have you been to Denver?
Oh, yeah, many times.
I mean, it's hard to... I just remember being, in shock how much the difference was from being up there to being back in Arkansas.
Perhaps.
Which Razorback holds the school record in career three-point percentage? Rodney Clark, Gennaro Pargo, Lee Mayberry, or Scotty Thurman? Career three-point percentage. Rodney Clark, Gennaro Pargo, Lee Mayberry, or Scotty Thurman?
My guess is Lee Mayberry.
That is incorrect.
Gennaro Pargo.
That is incorrect. It is Scotty Thurman.
Wow.
Shot a career 43%.
I love watching Gennaro Pargo back in the day.
Gennaro Pargo had a career 42%. 42.5. Lee Mayberry had 42.4.
Oh, so I was off a point.
You're off a point. Barely. Which Razorback holds the school record in career rebounds? Who has the most career rebounds in school history? The big O, Oliver Miller, Derek Hood, Sidney Moncrief, or Joe Klein?
I'm going to go Oliver Miller.
That is incorrect.
Sidney Moncrief.
That is correct.
Wow.
1,015.
Down 0-3. Jeez. I guess I didn't get a point for nailing Alcorn State over the 51 on that, did I?
No, I didn't. I didn't put.
I don't think that was the question.
Who is the leading scorer in Razorback basketball history? Corliss, Martin Terry.
Martin Terry.
That is correct.
Martin Terry has more points than anybody.
He does.
Where did he play?
He 82, I think, is what it said. He was here for like 1 or 2 years, but he went ballistic in those 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, down 0-4, jeez.
He averaged, just so you know, 26 points a game in his Razorback career.
Yeah. Wow.
Corliss had 18, Todd Day had 18, and Dean Tolson had 18 as well.
Yeah.
So, about it.
The more you know. I have never even heard of Martin Terry until looking him up today.
Yeah.
Who has made the most career free throws in Razorback history? Made the most career free throws in Razorback history. Was it Todd Day, Sidney Moncrief, Scott Hastings, or Joe Klein? Made the most career free throws.
Yeah, I was going to say Tommy Boyer, but he's not one of the options. Give me the options again.
Todd Day, Scott Hastings, Sidney Moncrief, or Joe Klein. Ty, you're down 3-0. You need something right here.
You want me to go first? Sit you down. Hey, Sidney Moncrief.
That is correct.
I mean, just go with the best player. You know.
Made a career 588 free throws.
Wow.
Which team?
I didn't know. I mean, just went with the best
player.
Which
team in Razorback history holds a school record for team scoring average? So which team had the best scoring average? Was it the 1989-90 team that featured Todd Day, Lee Mayberry, and Big O?
We're good.
The 93 national title team or the 1990-91 team?
Ooh.
Wasn't the 91 team the most hype and they didn't deliver that? Didn't they lose in like Sweet 16 or something?
Which one lost to Kansas in the Elite Eight?
Pretty sure it might have been that team. Yeah. And you said 92-93 or 93-94?
89-90, 93-94, 90-91.
I feel like that. I'm just going to go with the national championship team.
That is incorrect.
89-90.
That is incorrect. The 90-91 team scored 99.6 points a game.
Wow. That's a good guess. I mean, because they were putting up a bunch of points on that national title game.
Yeah.
Arkansas hung 117 points against this SEC opponent, which still holds the record for most points scored against an SEC opponent. was that opponent? Alabama, Auburn, LSU, or Vandy?
Alabama. I was going to say Florida. Alabama, Auburn, LSU, or Vandy.
They hung 117 on them. It is the most points they've ever scored against an SEC opponent.
Was this an overtime game? Couldn't be.
I don't believe it was. I could be wrong, though. No, no, I don't think it was.
Surely not.
Auburn? 99?
That is correct.
Is it 99? Is that the year?
93-94. Okay. They beat Auburn 117-105.
All right.
During Nolan Richardson's 17 years at Arkansas, how many times did he make the NCAA tournament? 11, 12, 13, or 14?
13 times.
That is correct. You're up 5-1. When was the last time Arkansas won a conference regular season championship? Not a conference tournament. Regular season championship.
95.
That is incorrect. 92, 94, 96, or 2000?
That should be easy for you. There's only one.
92, 94, 96, or 2000?
94.
That is correct.
Yeah.
I guess they came in second.
That seemed like a trick question.
Yeah.
When was the last time Arkansas reached the Sweet 16?
96.
That is correct.
Yeah, so that was easy.
6-2. Ty, you need 4 to get this thing tied up where you've got about a minute and a half left in the show. Michael Qualls is arguably the best dunker in Razorback history. How many times did he land on the SportsCenter top 10 plays?
Oh.
11, 12, 13, or 14?
12.
That is incorrect.
11.
He was on there 13 times.
Wow.
Now, bonus point. How many times was that? Of those 13, how many was the number one play?
Two?
I'm trying to help you out, Todd. No.
Two?
No. You got a guess?
Four.
Nope. It was only one time, and you'll know the
Alabama.
Game.
Alabama?
Nope. Versus Kentucky.
Kentucky game. Yeah.
Let's see here. Who is the highest draft pick in Razorback history? Sidney Moncrief, Joe Klein, Ron Brewer, or Alvin Robertson?
I think it's Moncrief, right?
That is Moncrief. Very good. He's fifth overall. Who was Arkansas's last victory against in the NCAA tournament? Wofford, Seton Hall?
Seton Hall, yeah.
Seton Hall is correct.
2017.
You're down 2. In school history, who has Arkansas beat the most? They held 64 victories against this team.
Tulsa.
TCU, Texas A&M, Rice, or Texas?
I'm thinking football.
Yeah, because in football, Tulsa would be correct. TCU.
That is incorrect.
Well, I'm out. Right.
It was Rice.
Rice. Yeah.
All right.
It had to be a Southwest Conference opponent.
Yeah. Last one, real quick. Name the two players that have gotten triple doubles.
Corliss and Sidney.
Hot day.
Courtney Fortson and Alvin Robertson.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer. 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.